Accession number 33202, reel 3.
Terry Light, reel 3.
Reel 3 already, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So I met my wife, my future wife, on that day. Funny how things turn out, isn't it? Extremely funny. So, on the train north from King's Cross, as four soldiers will, they got into discussion with these two young ladies from Tyneside. The tale I tell, my wife might not agree with this, the tale I tell is that out of the four, my wife didn't fancy any of them, and I was the bottom one on the list. So you can, the one she really thought was the most attractive was John Harvey, who became, as I say, the regular army officer in the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry. I wonder what's happened to him. Anyway, that's another story. So we returned to Strensel. And I found out during my time, my basic training in Strensel, that whether I got through Wasby or not, which regiment was I going to be posted to, and was I going to spend this military life in the UK, which from what I could ascertain was going to be extremely boring as a UK posting, with regardless of your rank, you were posted to a regiment, the regiment was resident in the UK. Okay, you would go on manoeuvres, say from Catterick or from Plymouth onto Dartmoor or wherever it happens to be, your regiment. The likelihood that I was, that I, having flopped on my Wasby, I was going to be posted to the to my county regiment, which was the Somerset Light Infantry. Now, the Somerset Light Infantry at that time had returned from the Milesian campaign, hunting communist insurgents, rebels in Malaysia. And they were being posted to Seton Barracks, Plymouth. Now, I did not, if I had to do this in forced time in something which was not my calling, I did not fancy doing that in the UK, where you are doing boring duties during the week and then just looking for a pass to get home or wherever it is at weekends. So I committed the, what's the gentlemanly CEO considered was a crime, in that I volunteered for parachute duties.
Why did he consider that a crime?
Why did he? Because I was being disloyal to the light infantry. In other words, you've been drafted into, you've been posted to the light infantry, you will be joining one of the great regiments of the light. He was, you know, a light infantry through and through, a career man, waiting for his retirement. And therefore, there was I, daring to, wanting to leave the light infantry and go into what he considered was to be a parachute regiment. So his gentlemanly approach dropped on my, when I'd applied, because you have to make a written application. The written application goes therefore before the adjutant. The adjutant then puts it under the nose of the camp commandant, and you're called up to say why in as many words. And I wanted to volunteer for parachute regiment duties because I felt that I could pass the necessary requirements and I would manage to see a bit of the world. Whereas if I joined all the light infantry, any of them, be posted to any of the light infantry regiments, I would either be posted to a home posting or Germany, neither of which really I found very attractive. So I was told in no uncertain terms that I would fail and that on my return I would be posted to a light infantry regiment of their choice. In other words, it was made pretty blunt, and this gentleman made it pretty blunt to me that I don't like what you're doing. I can't stop you from doing this. But if, when you come back here, not if, when you come back here, having failed, life could be a little awkward. So that's that was the attitude. So that really made me all the more determined to get through what in those days was known as the pre-parachute course, which was held at Aldershot. So I then caught the train down to Aldershot and went through the three pre-parachute course.
Tell me about that.
Oh, God. I didn't know what I was letting myself in for. In those far-off days, I was fit. I'd admit, I was fitter than I'd ever been, I think. Okay, I'd played a lot of sport in my time. But I was fit. And the light infantry training schedule, I suppose on reflection, was a good schedule for sharpening up that fitness. So I arrived at Aldershot Airborne Forces Depot, a fit individual, thank goodness. So at AFD, thankfully I didn't know what I was letting myself in for. You're put through what I would call a rigorous, that's a polite word I suppose, a rigorous course of being chased around by drill instructors, all wearing a red berry or maroon berry, army physical training instructors, and on reflection, I did not see a commissioned officer except in the final stages. In other words, you are chased around 24 hours a day, forced marches, running, walking, running, going across the, what do they call them? Just outside Aldershot, where they take you across what we, I think they were called the tank tracks. In other words, it's an area where you are taken as, you lose your identity again when you go on a pre-para course. In other words, you are a number on your airborne number up there, and a number on a vest which you wear over your battle dress. There's no identification of the regiment you've come from, and really you are just two legs, a person who's applied for volunteering for parachute duties. And I can always remember the first time we were called on parade, that particular course, on this parade ground at AFD. You bring your own BD with you, battle dress, you know, rough dress, whatever they called it in those days, I've forgotten. And when we were at Leader Platoon, the main identification of Leader Platoon was a green strip in your epaulette. In other words, every time you changed it, you put that in. It was a green light infantry identification. One there, one there. And I suppose, unfortunately for me, I bunged in my dress into a hold all, and of course gone down to Aldershot, and I'd left these epaulettes in. And of course you're not supposed to have any identification of unit, regiment as you come from. And the RSM AFD at that time was an RSM pestle. Now the RSM at Strensel was a gentleman compared to this fellow. Pestle, I think he was Irish, and on the first inspection, of course, he had a field day, pulling everybody to pieces, no matter where you are, because you had all ranks lined up, three lines of you, all ranks. And as I say, unfortunately, I'd left these three epaulettes, green, up here. And, oh my God, he tore me off a strip. And with his pace stick, with one of them, he put the pace stick underneath the epaulette and ripped it up and off. And, of course, behind every RSM there's a drill or drill sergeants making notes. And so I was force marched off the parade ground and told to remove the other epaulette and then doubled back onto the parade ground. And that was my baptism, as you might say, in my first parade at Airborne Forces Depot. I'm trying to think of the name of the barracks, but I think it's Corunna, but I'm not sure.
That sounds familiar.
Does it? Mm. Now, if it's maybe Corunna could have been the barracks for 3 Para, but AFD would have been different. AFD was the Airborne Forces Depot was all part of that Aldershot military complex, but entirely different to where 1, 2, and 3 Para were in barracks. So now I could have made a mistake. It may have been Browning. I don't know. So that was my baptism in at AFD, and as I've said, thereafter, the hours, the minutes, the hours, the days just flew by.
What did they have you doing?
God, everything. You're on your toes all the time. Oh, hi.
Right, so I will start now.
Well, as I remember those weeks there, those weeks of torture, it was, I suppose, in many respects, survival of the fittest. In other words, you went through being chased, as I say, by drill sergeants and army physical training instructors. You could be on, as I say, a gentle run in the morning. I don't know how many miles, somewhere in and around the area of Aldershot. You could be going through the... again, I can't remember what it's called, but you would be climbing up ladders and going across... I don't know, any of my colleagues you've seen already would have called it, what they call it, going across walkways. And it was really testing your head for heights. You would be involved in various team races. As I say, everybody had this number, and if I remember correctly, we also had a colour on our jacket, red, blue, green, yellow, and so on and so forth. So there would be sections, I suppose, of 8, say, and you would be involved in team competitions on the ranges or on the assault courses. And I suppose the one that sticks out in the mind of most of us would be the where there would be 4 of you on one side and 4 of you on the other in a race to carry a telegraph pole around a set course. And throughout these exercises, these competitions, you would be watched, observed by NCO instructors. Overall, there would be, as I remember it, a captain instructor, and he was in the parachute regiment. And they were assessing you all the time. You went into automatic mode, really, once it started. And as I said earlier on, I was a fit individual in those days. And so mentally I could cope with what was thrown at me. Physically I could cope with what was thrown at me, although it was torture at times. My fear was that I would fall over, sprain an ankle, a wrist or whatever it is, and be what was known as back squatted. So in other words, you'd be back squatted. You'd have to kill time, presumably at AFD, until the MO passed you fit again, and you'd have to do it all again. So you know, to be injured, minor injuries, was my big fear. I always remember the weeks there in which we were gradually weeded out for various reasons. There would be the obvious injuries. Somebody would disappear and be taken away on the field ambulance. But some people would snap under the constant supervision, being shouted at and having to do the physical and mental routines. And the one thing that sticks out in my mind was there was a corporal, a regular corporal, regular through and through, of the military police, or MP. And I suppose somewhere around midweek of the second week, he objected to one of the instructors giving him a mouthful. And I suppose he was physically and mentally tired. And not only did he have a go at him verbally, but physically. And that was the finish of him. He was frog marched away. We never saw him again. So, during those weeks, people would gradually, you'd come back into your barrack room, and there would be another vacant bedside. And then another thing, episode that I always remember, one of the sergeants, parachute regiment sergeant, again an Irishman, mad as a hatter. And you would have been out on doing whatever you do around the tracks during the day. Perhaps in the afternoon you come back dog-tired, filthy, head to foot. And then you'd have to clean up all your kit, readiness. And he came in, I suppose, about 2 o'clock one morning and ordered us all out of our beds and out onto the parade ground. I think he'd had a beer fall at the time. We thought afterwards that he'd been drinking in the mess, and then decided to vent his spleen on us by getting us out. But they were allowed to do this. The theory behind it was that you were in action, and you'd had a terrible time in action against the enemy. And then some emergency would occur at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you moved. It was things like that that tolerated, thinking in mind, being fully focused. Well, what the hell is this all about? I did not want to go back to Strensholm and face the camp commandant again. So I was focused, put up with it, get on with it, Terry, and hopefully get through and get on to the actual parachute course. So that's what carried me through.
And just to check times, now I would, by my reckoning, this is about November 55?
Yes, somewhere around November-ish. Yeah, could be.
Okay.
Put it this way. I finished parachute training at RAF Abingdon sometime in November.
Okay.
Because then all hell let loose, I gather, although I wasn't aware of it at the time, in Aldershot, where three para were then the lead battalion of the 16th Independent Parachute Brigade. And they were on standby to go somewhere. And instead of having any leave after parachute training at RAF Abingdon, the whole squad, if that's the right word, we were posted straight away, with one or two exceptions, to three para, to bolster three para's numbers.
Okay, so we're probably actually, we're in October actually.
Maybe, yeah.
So pre-parachute.
It was autumn.
Autumn
of 55.
And at the end of pre-parachute training, how did you find out you'd passed?
I think we were all called onto a parade ground, told you and you are going to RAF Abingdon, go and get on that wagon. Those who were left behind, RTU'd, return to unit. That was the way it was. That's all I remember. I know we crawled into, thankfully, into soft-sided trucks, and we were taken in convoy up to RAF Abingdon near Oxford.
And tell me what happened there.
A luxury camp. Complete contrast to Aldershot and Pre-Para.
Okay, now, just give me, paint me a picture of it.
What, Abingdon?
Abingdon, yeah.
Okay, RAF standards, RAF messing standards, RAF food. Okay, we're all in a, excuse me, we're all in a barrack room again. And various units. I was still badged with a light infantry badge. Somebody would be badged South Wales Borders, somebody else from the Highland Light Infantry, Middlesex Regiment. So you had a whole hodgepodge. I always likened a parachute unit as being the Foreign Legion of the British Army, because the county regiments, as in those days, 50, 60 years ago, their recruitment areas were basically within the county. So in effect, Durham Light Infantry would have been young fellows from the county of Durham or Teesside. Green Howards would certainly have been Middlesbrough, North Yorkshire. Somerset Light Infantry would have been Somerset lads. Whereas in the parachute regiment, they came from all walks of life, all parts of the United Kingdom, Irishmen, Welshmen, Scotsmen and Englishmen. So I joined this motley crew of various young fellows, most of them younger than me, because as I've already indicated, when I was drafted, ordered to join the army, I was, coming up to 23, whereas most of them were maybe 18, 19, so I was a little older than the majority. Life at RAF Abingdon, well, that was to my mind, was a cushy number. You started at 8 o'clock. You did, you were caught, there was a parachute regiment sergeant in charge of you. You were taken, marched to the hangars, where you then handed over to RAF instructors. Sergeants, flight sergeants, and I suppose for the first 10 days you looked at a parachute and saw how it was assembled, put together, but you didn't put one on. In other words, you went through various drills on the windmill, jumping, falling, learning how to fall, learning how to jump, mock aircraft in a hangar, learning how to go out of the aircraft, how to go out of port side or starboard side of the aircraft, how to do it on sticks, how to put on your chute.
Can you just talk me through the detail of some of that, whatever you remember?
Oh, God.
Well, let's start with how to jump.
How to jump. Well, you were taught how to... how to fall. You know, you did what is known as the roll.
Tell me about the roll.
To me, it wasn't easy. A typical, and I'd be interested to know what any of my colleagues say about this, a typical paratrooper, in my mind, he is a fellow who is about 5'6", 5'8", got meat on his shoulders, arms, hips, compact, in other words. Now, I was 11 half stone to 12 stone gangling, 23-year-old or whatever it was. I'm not a typical, physically, in that sense, I'm not a typical paratrooper. And one of the important things they always drummed into you was you must always keep your legs and ankles together and do the roll. Now, long legs, long arms, elbows, all over the place. At times it wasn't easy, but who cares? I got through that. No breaks. again, I come back to this attitude of, I'm going to do it, and I was physically fit. So there was no, to my mind, there was no turning back. So,
and, but just talk me through some of the other things. You were learning. So,
well, there's the rolling, and you'd come down on the, you'd be strapped into a harness, and you'd jump off and go down what I think they called the windmill. You'd descend at approximately the speed you would if you were on the end of a chute. And then there was another one. You would go in. This was outdoors, as I remember. You would go into a climb up, go into a cabin. We call it that. Be strapped into a harness. Harness would be hooked up to a cable, and I don't know, 200 yards, and you'd gradually go down the cable like this. Some of my colleagues would have explained to this to you in greater detail, I dare say. And, you know, you're gradually, the RAF training procedure for would-be parachutists, paratroopers, was, and is, I suppose, one of the best in the world. They're good. So you're gradually building up to the day when you would be allowed to actually put on a parachute, put on a reserve chute, clamber first of all into a barrage balloon, and then later into an aircraft. And it was a gradually, you were gradually built up. And I've nothing but admiration for the RAF and the way they trained us, and obviously the standards. You know, their messing standards were downside higher than the army every time, so that made life a little easier. I mean, you say once you finished at 5 o'clock, you finished. As long as your kit was in reasonable condition, which you know didn't really get dirty because you weren't running around in the mud, then the evening was yours, or the weekend was yours. Weekends were free, Saturdays and Sundays. So I used to come home. My parents' house was up on the other side of the city, Camden Road. Now, I'm not sure here. I don't think I ever... I was in correspondence with my would-be wife, but I don't think I ever visited her parents at this stage of the game. No, I didn't, no. So that was, you know... I forget which platoon it was. I've got a photograph of it somewhere. But that was a easy time. And then you, I suppose it, you had to get through a minimum of 8 jumps.
Can you remember your first jump?
Yes.
Tell me about your first jump, but from the beginning, because I'm interested in sort of the checking processes, you know, what's going on, where you're standing.
Well, the first jump was you would get up at crack of dawn, and then you would be taken by bus to Western Under the Green, I'm not quite sure. That was a satellite airfield, half dozen miles away from RAF Abingdon, I think on the way to Oxford. And there you would, 4 of you would climb into the basket of a barrage balloon. And in, no, 3 of you would clamber inside the barrage balloon, and the 4th person would be the RAF instructor.